With your money briefing, I'm J.R. Whalen at the Wall Street Journal in New York. Computers and algorithms putting Wall Street investors in the business of being landlords. We'll explain in a moment. First, these money and market stories you should know. The good news is shoppers are filing back into stores ahead of the holiday season. The bad news is there may not be enough workers to help them. Staffing up for the year-end crush is an annual challenge for retailers. There were 757,000 retail job openings across the country in July. That's about 100,000 more than the same time a year ago. The number of openings surpassed the number of hires from March through June for the first time in a decade. The Manpower Group staffing company says that sales representatives are among the hardest jobs to fill in the U.S. What's more, it's also a shortage in route drivers that is so severe in some areas. Retailers are asking all employees, from entry level to executives, to pitch in by delivering inventory to stores. And the Wall Street Journal Heard on the Street team says that people in the Carolinas are about to rediscover the difference between the damage a storm causes and what is covered by insurance. While wind damage is well covered by insurers and reinsurers, flood damage is absent from most homeowner policies and is typically an optional cover in commercial policies. The real estate data company CoreLogic estimates the total insured losses for wind and storm surge damage in North and South Carolina could be as little as $3 billion. That's much lower than earlier warnings that losses could be more in the range of $20 billion. But that number does not include any flood-related claims from commercial policies for property damage or business interruption, or for auto insurance or agricultural claims. But it's an indication that private insurance payouts to homeowners will likely be fairly low, even though thousands of homes will have suffered extensive flood damage.
Sponsored by Harvard Business School Executive Education, offering four comprehensive leadership programs that transform rising executives into confident business leaders. To learn more, visit hbs.me/transform. That's hbs.me/transform.
If real estate is all about location, 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 then finding the right house could be all about computers, computers, computers. Wall Street Journal reporter Ryan Dezember joins us to discuss how institutional investors are using algorithms to buy up large volumes of homes for rental property use. So, Ryan, the idea of Wall Street investors becoming landlords is relatively new. It became much more pronounced since the recession.
Yeah, and really, institutional investors didn't really mess with residential, single-family detached homes. They stuck to apartments, office towers, commercial properties. But the foreclosure crisis gave them an opportunity to buy a lot of homes very cheaply and in the volume they needed, sort of the density, wherever they were buying. And now that foreclosures have returned to normal, we're seeing these investors buy homes off the open market. And, you know, of course, when they're buying thousands of homes a year, they don't have time to go to showings. They have to sift through a lot of listings, to find what they want. And so they've used some sophisticated technology to do that.
And then you enter Martin Kay, who's a data scientist you spotlighted, and he's profiled in your story. He began machine learning about 8 years ago to find ideal tenants for rental properties he had bought.
Yeah, so he and some partners were investing some money they had in foreclosed properties, just like a lot of other investors. They, because of his background, using sort of big data and sort of sorting that and developing algorithms and systems for the computer to sort of learn on its own and handle a lot of these tasks, he started using that in his own investing, and it caught the attention of other investors. And over time, he realized for his skill set, he's probably better to supply the software and do the work for other investors rather than, you know, be a big landlord himself.
And the computers involved, they take on a lot of tasks, like asking clients what they're looking for and then doing a search for a home.
Yeah, it's sort of grown from sort of simple things, like we want homes that have, at least 3 bedrooms, 2 baths, a garage, and are in a homeowners association in, you know, these zip codes, to sort of more the sort of things that a human would just know intuitively if you drove to an open house and went inside and saw a house. Like, the example we highlighted in the story is, you know, how do you teach a computer to identify a sunny kitchen?
This was fascinating in your story, how the computer can have all kinds of data and determine a sunny kitchen from a kitchen with not a lot of light.
Yeah, and that's sort of where machine learning comes in. Again, they don't have time to scan, you know, or look through, say, 40,000, you know, listings in Atlanta or in the Atlanta area every day. So they use a computer to sort of winnow the list to a sort of manageable a number of properties to actually have a human look through. They might go from 40,000 to, you know, a dozen homes for a human to then vet. But, you know, one of the things they might want is say the investors say, well, our tenants want a sunny kitchen. So they teach a computer, you know, to do that, the computer first has to know, what the heck's a kitchen? What does sunny mean? So they start by sort of programming the computer to identify cooking spaces and to identify things like windows in pictures or light fixtures. And then they take it from there. And it's just really a matter of a lot of repetition, showing a computer a picture of a kitchen saying, this is a kitchen.
And then if somebody is looking for a chef's kitchen, the computer might look for a kitchen with multiple sinks or a couple of refrigerators.
Yeah, yeah. And if the data is available, you know, the data involved in these houses or attached to these houses varies greatly from county to county, or, you know, whether you're getting it from a foreclosure auction or from a listing where a realtor is taking photos and put up a lot of, you know, written description. So they'll look for things like that in photos. They might scan the written descriptions. If it's available, if they have floor plans, they might look at the size of the kitchen compared to the rest of the house and say, it's a very large kitchen, so maybe this is a chef's kitchen.
And the computers, they collect much more than just the physical characteristics of the house. It also tries to project future value.
One thing that they do that's sort of interesting is they'll look at the neighborhood and they'll say, okay, how far is it from a Starbucks? How far is it from a yoga studio? How far is it from a tattoo parlor? And in that neighborhood, is a tattoo parlor a good thing, like perhaps a sign of gentrification, or maybe is it a sign of decay? And a lot of that has to do with, well, is a tattoo parlor near a yoga studio and a coffee shop serving $5 lattes? Or is it, you know, sort of in an abandoned, otherwise abandoned shopping center next to a pawn shop and a liquor store?
But they sort of have to run a fine line between how they characterize whether a neighborhood is on the upswing or the downswing because of federal laws where you can't use too many characteristics?
Yeah, that has more to do with, like, demographic data. So they might take the census data and look at median income to know sort of, like, you know, what the people in that neighborhood can afford, what people are paying in rent. You know, if it's the sort of neighborhood where somebody, say, can buy a $5 latte on a whim or go to a $20 exercise class, they try to stay away from demographic information involving race and things like that, because that they can sort of run into this tricky area where they could violate the Fair Housing Act. They don't want to, you know, redline neighborhoods or be discriminatory. And to that end, they tend to skew toward, you know, positive measures. Is this tattoo parlor a sign of trendiness? They might not tell you it's a sign of decay. Now, me and you going to an open house might be able to tell just intuitively what that is.
And the title of your story is more or less how you can shop for a house like a Wall Street investor. How can the average homeowner make use of this technology?
Well, I think it's probably a ways off, because I think these people are trying to sell this data for a lot of money to big investors. And you know, me and you probably have time to go to an open house. We know the area. We're not looking to buy a house or hundreds or thousands of houses 1,000 miles away. It's sort of they are looking to bring this down market to, say, you know, more mid-size investors or, you know, people who were traditionally a landlord in, say, their town who might want to branch out to, you know, if they're in St. Louis and they rent houses, maybe they want to branch out to Nashville or Memphis or something.
I guess this says a lot about what the rental inventory is in this country. I mean, it really is the complexion of the housing market has changed so much since the end of the recession when this really became, really was on the scene.
Yeah, since the financial crisis, we've seen a tremendous growth in the number of rent households compared to those that are occupied, owner-occupied. So, yeah, there are more people renting. And there's a lot of people renting that would have the financial wherewithal probably to buy in this market. You know, foreclosures have come off their credit if they had that in the past. It's been enough time for that. Lending has loosened up a little bit. You know, people are able to sell the homes that may have been underwater a few years ago and get out and buy a newer house. So there's clearly, it looks like from the data, there's people that are renting and choosing to rent that may have otherwise bought these, like, sort of big suburban houses in nice school districts.
All right. Well, check out the story on WSJ.com and the WSJ app. That's Wall Street Journal reporter Ryan Dezember joining us here in our studio. Ryan, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen in New York for the Wall Street Journal.